Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Monday, 15th of February, 2021, and markets closing at a new record highs in the U.S. S&P 500 and NASDAQ 100 both managing that feat into the Friday close. And I just think things getting more and more interesting for a number of reasons. We've been talking up caution as the markets have marched higher. We're not going to change that message in the near term. And we saw on Friday the VIX index, a volatility for the S&P 500 closing at a new cycle low and below, you know, symbolically, I guess, but it's also a tremendous line on the chart, the 20 level, below the 20 level for the first time since just before all the whole pandemic started wiping out markets in February of last year. And then on slide two, I'm just noting here, you can see the incredible run up in the S&P 500 on the leftmost chart there. It's a weekly chart going back 5 years. And on the right, you can see the Nikkei, no slouch there. And that's the Nikkei in dollar terms, which is almost doubled from those 2020 lows. And actually in dollar terms, crossed recently to a new all-time high. In yen terms, there's still quite a bit to go because the yen is in a very different place than it was all the way back in 1989. You can believe that we're still talking about 1989 prices and showing that the performance in the S&P or in the US has actually not been outdone. Or actually has been matched in many cases, maybe not in the NASDAQ 100 and, of course, key individual stocks, but by something like Japanese stocks, quite remarkable. And the reason that one of the reasons things are so interesting now is the pressure from interest rates, where we're seeing the long end of the U.S. yield curve and actually the yields elsewhere as well, beginning to perk up and to a significant degree and making new highs for the cycle. So we closed above 2% on the 30-year in the U.S. on Friday. You can see that on slide three. It's a very important symbolic level. It was sort of a major low. There was a brief attempt to take it out, actually all the way back in 2019 before COVID was even conceived of. And, you know, so these are basically the pre-COVID lows and yields for the 30-year that we're starting to bump up against. And given how we've been talking about this a lot on the podcast, that you know, asset prices to a large degree are priced on, you know, in multiples and pricing assumptions based on longer term yields. So as these go higher, theoretically, a lot of these assets should be marked down in terms of their multiples. And, you know, safe to say that has not been the case so far. So this is providing some offsetting pressure to the enthusiasm. It's fine to see higher and higher yields sort of as a passive reflection of an improved growth outlook and so on. But when you have extremely a leveraged economy, we have a much more leveraged economy than we had before the crisis, it means that the sensitivity to yields is that much greater. And because multiples have expanded so aggressively on central bank support, it also means you're having a severe tightening of financial conditions, at least by this metric. Other measures of financial conditions, less so. And before I... I'll stop talking in 1 second. I need to turn it over to you and be quiet. My monologue is stretching far beyond anything I wanted to. I just wanted to point out also on slide three that today's session in the U.S., and we only have a brief session because the U.S. is off for a holiday today, seeing even further follow through in the selling in Treasury, so even higher yields, 4 to 5 basis points in the case of the 30-year. And over to you, Ola. I mean, what we're seeing as well is a big upswell in commodity prices. Reflation trade seems to be very much back on.
Exactly, John. And just finishing off your, because you talk about the risk to stocks of these rising yields, the only market or one of the few markets that where we actually so far have seen the negative impact is the gold market, to a certain extent silver as well, being dragged down, being held down by gold. We've been in a downtrend now since August last year, and it just wonders, and we're just starting to think a little bit loud here whether we should start to worry a bit about the short-term outlook here, because we have not been able to respond favorably to the pickup in inflation expectations that we've seen for the past month. The market is more transfixed on the nominal yield, which, as you're mentioning, are moving higher, primarily driven by rising inflation expectations. But nevertheless, it's also helped strengthen the dollar, even though that dollar strength seems to be pausing now. But generally, just raising the question whether, or we are raising the question whether we should start to be a little bit concerned about gold here. I put it on slide eight in today's deck. You can see obviously the phenomenal rally we've already seen in commodities during the past 6 weeks. Those with a tightening supply outlook, oil, copper, platinum, leading from the front. And then the laggards, those that are impacted by lockdowns, cocoa and coffee are not being consumed. And then we got gold sitting there at the bottom, almost down more than around 4% at this stage. So looking at the chart on the same page, we can see that the key level right now is really 1760, just in the low 1760s. That is the 50% retracement of the whole run up from the March low last year. And that's where we found support back in the end of November. So that's really the key area there. And I suppose from a longer term perspective, we really need to break below 1700 in order to create a cascade of long liquidation. But that market is most certainly troubled right now by the rising yields. And I think on the commodity story, then I think there's one that's quite fascinating, and which you have experienced being a Texan, is the is this cold blast that we're currently seeing across the U.S. You got a bit more detail about. I'm just on slide 7. You can see this is from the National Weather Service. They're basically saying that we more than 100 sites may tie or break record low maximum temperatures in the central U.S. And this is really another reason why we've seen another leg higher in oil prices today. We're trading up 1.5% on Brent crude, and that is due to this cold blast reaching as low as Texas and down into the Permian, which is obviously the biggest oil producing region in the U.S. It could potentially impact the production and transportation of a few 100,000 barrels of oil, not a lot, but at the same time, enough just to add to the current momentum we're seeing in the oil market.
Yeah, and you see these crazy spot price spikes as well. And even in the case, and I put it some charts, as you indicated on slide 6, showing the current, where we are in terms of the temperature anomaly and just this crazy deep sort of pink area suggesting we're, 20 degrees centigrade below normal for this time of year. But you get crazy spikes in prices. It does potentially inflict damage on pocketbooks and on psychology, but then you just see, a week later, it's all gone. So, this is, it's a transient phenomenon, but it certainly is getting a lot of attention. We've seen some pretty significant new highs in oil, as you showed on that other chart there. But let's head back to implications for yields across FX. My area, and what we're seeing is a very bifurcated market. So we have a lot of enthusiasm for the usual suspects when there's an upswell enthusiasm for risk appetite, emerging market currencies, and obviously with commodity prices rising, that new high in copper overnight, for example, even though China is offline and really the key market is China for example, iron ore prices and for the Australian dollar, you can see the difference of what's going on slide 4, where you can see the Aussie is now challenging those cycle highs that towards 78, slightly higher, after quite a turnaround late last week. When I was thinking, actually being the question whether we might actually correct back towards the lows, and given that, again, China offline, things are quiet for a while, maybe we head sideways to consolidate. Nope, we're back towards the highs for the cycle, dollar towards the lows for the cycle in many places, except if you look on the left, dollar yen, and even euro dollar to a lesser degree. We haven't pushed back towards the highs there, but clearly, the yen even more sensitive, or the most sensitive to higher U.S. yields. And if we close above 105.50 there, that's towards the 200-day moving average. You've got sort of an indication of a new uptrend in your sights rather than simply a short squeeze developing. So really pivotal stuff there, U.S. yields, risk appetite, dollar yen on the one hand, and then on the other side there, the commodity complex, and at what point do higher yields potentially destabilize risk sentiment? So the correlations could suddenly break and run in opposite directions if, as we saw in late 2018, high yields sort of break confidence rather than or simply a side effect of rising confidence. And that takes us to positioning in the FX market. On slide 5, you put in the positioning where it's still really dominated by that big euro long, but the Japanese yen, people have been getting quite long of it as well before this latest weakening.
Yeah, it's reached the highest level since 2016, just 4 weeks ago, and doing that, and since then it's dropped by one third. So, but generally. still a major dollar short out there if we look on the left-hand side of slide five. And we were just contemplating before, the euro long is very sticky. We haven't seen much in terms of reduction there. And I suppose today it's euros just a tad higher. I suppose it's still the draggy honeymoon that's adding some support to Europe. Because obviously, if we are seeing a yield move higher, the yield move higher in the US at the time where we're not at that stage yet in Europe, then that euro short is still something that we should keep an eye on.
Yeah, and also if you look at Europe, where you have the ECB purchases so large that they're effectively covering net issuance, and then some this year compared to the US, where there's a bit more price discovery because the Fed's buying is small compared to the net issuance. As yields rise, those it's unlikely to see European yields performing, just like the case is for Japan. So it's not really exciting backdrop for a rising euro here. So euro dollar may dribble higher because of a weaker dollar. And I'll have some further thoughts on sort of the thermonuclear scenario for the dollar, if you will, if it starts trading like an emerging market currency. But I'll get to those thoughts perhaps tomorrow. So yeah, you have a positioning headwind, I think, for further upside for euro, and as well the backdrop I don't think is particularly supportive. Certainly not in the crosses if we're seeing more of this reflationary style behavior across markets. Now take us through. You've got another slide here looking at just the and it's been a grinding backdrop story for quite some time. The market is very positioned to look for a commodities boom here. Take us through your thoughts there. And you've got this remarkable chart on slide nine.
Yeah, they are indeed. On slide nine, you can see the cut report, which I sent out on analysis.saxo earlier this morning. So you can find the more detailed report there. But basically just showing the speculative length across the commodity space, across these 24 major raw materials that's highlighted on the table here. And as you can see, we continue to move into deeper and deeper into record territory. And again, this time around it's broad-based. It's both the agricultural space that's seeing strong buying. It's also especially the energy space. Metals being held back by the lack of appetite for precious metals, gold and silver for now. Or at least let's see if that becomes even a bigger theme going forward. But the focus is, it is reflation. It is a post-pandemic growth sprint. It is the outlook for tightening supplies of key commodities, crude oil, copper, platinum, to mention a few, some of the agriculturals as well, due to very strong overseas demand for soybeans and corn. And that's basically the whole story that that's the story we're driving there. The risk is obviously with that, if we do see any change in the technical or fundamental outlook, there is a massive long that needs to get adjusted. But for now, it's just difficult to see what could change the outlook. The commodity story, which has been has received increased focus, is also increasingly being backed by investors putting their money where their mouth is.
Right. And this week, this earnings season, still galloping along, plenty to look at this week. And if you're wondering where Peter is, our equity strategist, he is offline this week. So we'll have to entertain you on that front as well. We'll do our best. But you can see the schedule of the major earnings releases that are probably of most interest on slide 10 this week. Today, we've got BHP Group, the mining giant, reporting. And then if you'll note, later in the week, we have Rio Tinto on Wednesday. There are a couple of these interesting, these sort of highly speculative names, that are reporting as well. Palantir, which has been a controversial one because of concerns about whether it can, its valuation is justified. It was involved in this recent short squeeze. And then Shopify, just probably, to my mind, I'm sure there may be other more spectacular stocks out there over the last few years, but look at the chart on the right. On slide 10, it's more than a 10 bagger since its 2017 highs, or its lows there just before 2019 rolled into view, if you will. And it's reporting. This is a remarkable company. It is experiencing great growth, but it's also got an incredible valuation. $178 billion market cap, trading at 70 times trailing 12-month sales. interesting stuff, and we'll see how they, you know, these extremely extended, very, very, very aggressively speculative stocks. Interesting to see how the market reacts to A, what they say in their earnings report, and B, to this backdrop in which a rising higher yields are a threat to the sort of these extreme duration type multiples on stocks like this. In other words, for that future growth, the discount to, you know, the models for evaluating future growth and future income are challenged by a rising yield environment. In any case, interesting one to watch there. That's probably would be my highlight of the week if I was a an equities with an equities hat on. And that takes us to the macro calendar. We've got closed U.S. Markets today for President's Day. So it's a four-day week this week for the U.S. A couple of bits and pieces and really incoming economic data this week. Not terribly interesting. Maybe the NAHB housing market index in the U.S. on Wednesday. But do note, as I discussed last week, that while U.S. 30-year treasury yields have come up quite aggressively because of compressing credit conditions in the mortgage market, you're not seeing that much feed through yet into mortgage rates. So it could take quite some time before that market experiences headwinds. FOMC minutes, the highlight from central banks of the week. And then Turkey, quite an interesting decision, as we've got a couple things in view here. Extremely aggressive risk-taking across the EM space, and Turkey with this spectacular 17% interest rate as dollar try has moved all the way back down to that, and now below, as we come into trading this Monday, below seven. They're going to be awfully tempted, I think, to cut rates, although the latest consensus is they will maintain that 17% rate. So interesting to see how the market absorbs that particular announcement on Thursday. I think that's a wrap for today, and we will be back tomorrow with Saxo Market Call. For today, thanks for joining.